Okay, right. I'm sticking us straight on recording because I know what we're like.
Cool. Yep.
So, just before we do talk about Esoteric Ebb, I do have an idea that I keep running it past Rosie, and I want to hear what you've got to say. It's about the movie thing, right? Also, my hair is silly. So I'm having trouble. Like, you, if you look at your website, you see you've got the bar charts of all the number of the. Oh, we've watched Crank 1 at the moment. We're going to watch Crank 2 tonight, by the way, just to let you know where we are.
Classic.
And I was thinking, how about, I don't know what the right term for this is, because I'm not in education. I don't think it's grading on a curve, but it's like a proportionality to it, right? So, whereas you've just given everything a 1 to 10 score, I was thinking what I could do is list all the movies I think I've watched, put them in order of best to worst, and then top 10% gets a 10, next 10% gets a 9, 8, 7, 6.
Oh, no, I don't like that at all.
No. But isn't it entirely proportional?
But what if there's 99 films you love equally and then one film you absolutely fucking detest, and then they're smoothly 1 to 10? Like, that makes no sense. I mean, that's obviously outlandish, but yeah, No. If anything, Rosie should have pointed this out to you. They should be fit to a bell curve.
Okay.
You've got to do it like that. But still don't like that. I don't know what actually. I need to ask Rosie about that, because I don't know what would be the. That would be five. I get five, obviously, would be the same. No, I don't know how that would work.
Is that grading on a curve? Is that what the term is?
Yeah. Essentially, yeah. It's not about. I don't think it's a bell curve the way they do it. I hate that concept, though, in America.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that you, like, year to year, you can, like, the exact same essay, which can be an absolutely perfect essay, the greatest essay ever created by humankind, and it can get a different mark depending on what your class is.
Well, no, actually, if it's the greatest essay of humankind, it will always be at the top end of the curve.
That's true. Yes.
But I get your point. If you've got an above average essay, that could come into various different,
Yeah. No, I hate that idea.
Okay.
I hate any attempt. I mean, I know this is completely off what we're supposed to be talking about, but I just like the idea of I don't like education being too sort of metricized and standardized. Like, I was in school in the UK when they brought in the national curriculum. Before that, the teachers just taught what they wanted to teach with respect to what they know is going to be in the exam or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was down to the teacher. Which I think imposing things like a national curriculum, it brings the bottom end up, but I think it brings the top end down.
Also,
I think,
of course,
really amazing teachers don't get to shine.
Yeah, and also each teacher is going to have a slightly, like, one teacher might be really good at teaching one aspect of their field and awful at the other. So they, it could mean that, because, like, the thing is, teaching in and of itself is a skill, and presumably some teachers will take a different app, like, will be better at teaching different parts of their the curriculum, their
and
field.
Also, I think not having a curriculum means that a teacher can use their own judgment based on their own abilities and just their judgment. Like, if you've got to teach, I don't know, the nonsense example, but say you've got to teach mechanics, and you feel like, I can't think what, like, something else that's not, you know, wouldn't be in the national curriculum would be helpful. It's not in the exam or whatever, but it would be helpful in terms of understanding the other things. So let's teach that.
Like tire science.
That's exactly, tire science.
Tire science.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I think just give.
But, like, I mean, the capitalist argument against that is that, well, you've then got all different kinds of people with all different kinds of skill sets, and there's not a piece of paper that says what you fundamentally know in employment point of view.
I hate that. I also think when you get marked, I don't think it should, like, the American system is the most pronounced form of what I dislike, but it should just be down to that individual teacher on that individual day to say what they think that work is worth.
Mm.
And if that's going to differ from teacher to teacher, that's absolutely fine. I mean, standardized exams at the end of it, absolutely. Yeah, because you do need this area or whatever.
Yeah, but fair enough. But I mean, I was here, like, because it is a case of, like, well, am I going to go out and seek bad movies to level the chart out then?
I think you should. What I did when I started using Track, because I've only been doing this list for a year or so, within that realm. And I, obviously, when I watch a film, I try to remember to add it to the list. But I also just try, if I remember watching a film and I know what I thought of it, I'll just stick it on the list as well. You know, like,
I don't,
it's not just from that point onwards, it's looking back as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go through your list and re-rate the movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
Although,
For me. Also, if I rewatch it, or you know, it, just in conversation, change my mind about something. These aren't set in stone. I will go and change my rating. Like, it should be a fluid thing. It's not set in stone. Because I mean, the numbers, attaching a number to, like, even movies that I fucking adore. Like, I love White Men Can't Jump. I love Crank, and I love say The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
Right. But they're such different. You can't compare those three fucking films. They're not doing the same thing.
So you couldn't, like, you couldn't necessarily order them.
Not really. No. So the number, it's not arbitrary. It means something, but it's just like, how much do I enjoy this film? What does this film mean to me? You know, like, it's a bunch of things, and I think that's fine. I think trying to make it into one objective thing where you objectively rate, you know, these artistic works is a silly endeavor. Not necessarily a completely unworthwhile endeavor, because, you know, it gives you a chance
to think about it. Yeah,
but it's a sparking off point for discussion and thought more than it is like an objective ranking.
Yeah. Also, I know you've done this in a bar chart. Would a pie chart at all be any would a pie chart convey?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like pie charts.
Rosie doesn't like pie charts. She prefers donut charts for some reason.
Hang on, what's a donut chart?
It's like a pie chart with a hole in the middle. Yeah.
Hang on, why is it different? Isn't that the same thing?
She has explained this to me before.
Isn't it still angles?
Yes.
Angles representing.
Yeah, but there is a reason. And it does make sense, but I've forgotten what the reason is. Sorry, Rosie.
We need to get Rosie on for a charts edition.
A charts edition. Data and charts, yeah. I think so. Maybe you're right. The thing is, what not bothers me, but the problem I think I'm solving is what is the rating system, right? Like, surely the best 10% of films should be in the 10, the worst 10% of films should be in the 1.
No. I mean, it comes back to the scale. If the scale were objective, then most films would be somewhere in the middle, right? That's why it would be a bell curve. You'd have very few really good films and very few really bad films, and most, you know, they just.
When I was talking about this with Rosie, she said there would be like a tits curve where there's a lot of films that would fall in the 3 and 7 categories. Films that I liked that aren't great, films that I didn't really like, but they weren't terrible.
Yeah, I think she's right, but I think that's where it becomes more subjective. Like, we don't tend to rate many things a 5, because when things are good or bad, we feel strongly about them, which pushes it into that tit thing, I think. I think that's where the subjectivity. Maybe Rosie knows far more about that stuff, obviously. But that seems my sense is like you, us as being emotional. If we were robots, it'd be a bell curve. But because we're emotional human beings, we don't feel strongly about 5s, so we push them out a bit. So we make them worse or better. And, you know, mediocrity is kind of like it's worse than bad sometimes.
But it's a very specific kind of mediocrity. It's like right down the middle mediocrity. It's not like good, not great, or bad, not terrible.
Well, it's Big Bang Theory again. I think what you are, and the people who dislike Big Bang Theory, what they are objecting to is the blandness of it, the mediocrity of it. It's not really the worst thing anybody's ever watched. Not even close. it's just bland and mediocre. That's what. So it should be bang on 5. But I think very few people would rate it 5.
Yeah, that's a fair point, because I'm thinking about some of the fucking daytime TV shite. And it's like, yeah, that would be a 1. You know, I'd rather just sit in a featureless room than watch some of the various medical dramas and
morning and afternoon weekday TV. Like, it's when you were off school. In the 80s TV was interesting, but in the 90s when it got deregulated, it's just slop all fucking day. Apart from like the peak times, just complete fucking slop.
Yeah, and I don't even know how long TV is going to stay with us, to be honest. As in, like,
well, it surprises me when people mention.
Yeah,
like, to me, it's like I've not encountered broadcast TV for decades. Apart from, you know, walking through the living room, and my mum was watching it back in the day, and
Yeah.
I think my sister still watches it a little bit, which is surprising because she's younger than me.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. Like, because the thing is, right, this is going back a bit now, but I've got a particular weird, I don't know if it's a fondness or an attachment to The Chase on, I don't know, like, they play it around, like, what, five, half five o'clock, right? And the reason...
I've watched a couple of episodes. It's literally, like, to describe it, people run away and other people try and chase them, right? Literally.
Well, they use there's questions. It's a quiz game, yeah.
On a board. Is it?
Yeah.
Is that a different show where people just, like, run out into the country and try and hide?
Different. Yeah, this is a very normal, a very bland game show.
I know, yeah, sorry. Yeah. I know what you mean now. Sorry.
Chase.
There is a show like that, or there was a show like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But, you know, back in my, like, more hooking up days, I used to, you know, grab a hotel with a woman, and a lot of the time it would just be that would be on because that's kind of the time that you would check in and so and you just stick something on the TV to, like, you know, get some noise in or something and there he is, Bradley Walsh or whatever his name is, just, you know.
I really don't like Bradley Walsh. He seems like a perfectly nice person, but his presentational manner is fucking irritating.
He's fine. He's just your average.
He's so London-y that, like, he can't pronounce words.
So
many times he asks a question, I'm like, what were those? Because it's just Cockney bilge coming out of his mouth. Like, no.
Call blimey, apples and pears, governor. Oh, like, Gregory Peck.
It's like a foreign language. Like, what the fuck did he just say? I don't know what the question.
No, he's fine.
Which is, in a quiz, is fucking important.
I mean, I have no strong opinions on him, but I think that's why he presents so many shows, because people generally don't, or he's just a guy that no one seems to have a problem with except for you, which is actually quite common. There's a lot of people that you, like,
that is fair.
You seem to just not like for reasons that seem rather arbitrary, but okay. But, anyway, okay, yeah, no, you're pretty, I feel like you're talking me out of it, to be honest.
I don't think the bands works. I think you've got to, for me, so it is a difficult thing to do. Like I just said, how do you compare, you know, Crank, whatever and whatever? Like, it's an inherently difficult thing to do because they're different fucking things, and you react, you know, some films tickle your brain, you know, make you think. Some films are just a pure emotional thing, you know,
You
know, how do you compare a comedy to, like, a very intense psychodrama or something?
Yeah.
I think you've just got to come up with a way of processing that into a number, which for me is, it's just how much do I enjoy it, which isn't quite right, but it's, you know, closer.
I mean, it's easier to do a scale of 1 to 5 because you've got 1 terrible, 2 terrible, not awful, 3 completely average, 4 good, 5 great. But then you might as well just say average, good, very good, except, you know, like, at that point.
No, I think in theory, but I always hate 1 to 5 because I'm like, you know, this film and this film shouldn't both be a 4, but neither of them can be a 5 or a 3. Like, but these don't deserve to be, like, this is so much better than that. I'll get into that situation, which exists also with 1 to 10, but I'm resisting the urge to do decimals because then it's 100 and you're just lying to yourself.
Yeah, you just do as a percentage. Yeah. But then,
I think the smooth grading 1 to 10, I think, is a bad idea because then you're not going to discover, like, maybe you just will enjoy watching a lot of bad films, and that would be an interesting thing to find out about yourself. Like, maybe, like, there is just, like, a ridiculous number of 1, and you're like, seems like I enjoy watching, because I enjoy watching bad things sometimes. Not in a so bad it's good way, just things I fucking hate. I just enjoy watching things I hate sometimes.
That is very true, actually. It does feel like the banding devalues the information a little bit.
I mean, if I think the idea of just putting them in an order and forgetting about the rating, I think that's perfectly fine. This is the
order. But then the banding, like, is arbitrary then. Why have you banded it? You've just, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's always arbitrary if you...
Yeah. So then
I was interested. It's why I did the graph thing, because I kind of assumed it would fit to a bell curve roughly, and it doesn't, which is interesting.
Mm. How did you do it, by the way? A little bash script that's...
Yeah, it's just in the bash script, yeah. It just happened. memory is all it does.
So you do it, what, in percentages, and then you put those percentages in a div width or something like that?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I just turn. I count the whichever number has the highest, which is 7 for me.
Yeah,
that gets normalized to 100, and then everything is a proportion of that. Essentially,
sorry, whatever number is the highest.
Oh, yeah, as so in 7. So if 7, I think at the time that I was writing it, so 7 had 145.
Mm-hmm.
145 things were rated 7, and that was the highest number of ratings for a number.
Yeah.
So basically divide that by whatever you need to divide it by to make it 100, and then divide all the others by that same number, so they're all effectively a
percent.
Yeah. So what you said, essentially turn them all into a percent.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, mine peaks at 7. Like I think I said last time, there's a fairly smooth curve, but you know, but like bell curve from 4 to 10.
Yeah.
But then a big spike at 3 and 1.
Yeah. I did have a think about whether or not I wanted to move over to tab separated values or not, but I find them so messy. I find tabs quite messy. Yeah. Like I like the concept of them.
Yeah, you don't like tabs generally. Any time we've talked about this, like you just don't like. I think you just don't like tabs philosophically because they're not anything in particular.
Like
they're a purely relative character.
Yeah, like the arguments in favor of tabs in general make a whole bunch of sense to me, right? Tab separated values, yeah, tab doesn't come up in data in basically any other form, and it's on a keyboard. Great. Also, you can, you know, change the width of the tabulated columns so that you can actually make a table out of it. Oh, okay, that actually sounds really good. Until you get to the nuts and bolts of it, where it's like, okay, then it's tab stop equals, or whatever the thing is, tab width equals 30 characters, and then you've got... It's not neat. Well,
as we discovered the other day, we can use the column command to make nice tables out of them.
The column command works very nice. And then also on the phone, because I do some amount of stuff on the phone, tabs can, like, for example, Marker, the markdown editor / text editor, it's really good, and it has an option to add in tabs, and I think it adds in tabs, weirdly enough, as like a triple width of a triple space rather than an actual tabulated column, and that actually works on a phone, because tabs on a phone as well don't, you know, like...
See, I would, and both Wing and I have said this, and I think you reject this, but for me and Wing, like the TSV file is just the data file. I don't interact with that manually. I mean, I can, and I have, but in theory, on my terminal, I type rate, and then in quotes, like white men can't jump, and then the year, and then the rating, and I just press enter, and the rest just happens all automatically. Like, I don't edit that file.
Do you not put in the date of rating? Oh, that automatically.
Doing it with a command, it just yeah.
Again, I do it through my phone, so editing the text file is kind of the easiest. What happens if you want to change something? Do you edit the text file if you want to change it?
Yeah. If I want to edit something, I mean, I could make the script do that, but that's more hassle than.
You've got to type in "white men don't jump" again, and if you misspell it,
yeah. At that point, it's easier to just open the TSV. Yeah.
So I kind of figured that my CSV is editing is fine.
I mean, you could. I mean, yeah. I mean, it seems silly, but I would just put termarks on your phone. Copy whatever script you use on your desktop. Just copy the script across and do the same thing you do on your phone as you do on your. That's still easier than editing a CSV file on a phone, I think.
No, editing a CSV is fine. You just point to where you want to edit. Sync server.
Typing a little command in Termux is easy.
I could just log into the server on Termux. Just da 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 da.
No, all that.
And go straight to the source.
I think you would be better off. It's up to you, obviously. But I think you'd be better off writing a command that puts the data in the file rather than manually editing the file.
But then I want to edit it.
I think that's part of it. Isn't it? You like editing data.
It makes sense to me. But what if, as well, is how about? I haven't even done this on Termux yet. What about using Vim on Termux? Is that possible?
I think I've done that. Yeah. I think I've done that. It's not the most pleasant experience, but it's doable. Yeah.
I mean, it might.
Ed.
Oh well, okay. That would
actually, for something like this, Ed is actually, I wouldn't say perfectly suited, but quite well suited.
Yeah,
because it does just edit one line at a time. It thinks in terms of lines, which is exactly what you want for something like this.
Yeah, I could just edit in Ed.
Edit it in Ed.
Edit it in Ed. Yeah. I need to get a lot more familiar with those little commands. Ed said orc. I need to rewatch your orc video. That needs to go on PeerTube.
Anytime I want to do something with Ed, I have to rewatch my own video about said, where I talk about how to use Ed.
Yeah. Can you just put them? Can you put them on? Put them on PeerTube. Join us on PeerTube.
They're CC. You put them on PeerTube. Somebody else put them on PeerTube. I can't be honest.
I might actually. Well,
I did. I had an idea. I had an idea the other day. Yesterday, last night, in fact. So I was listening to classical music on YouTube. And before that, I'd been listening to a few like 90s anthems, and I wanted the lyrics on. So, you know, there's always on YouTube for any song, there's always a lyrics video, right?
Always, yeah.
And I've thought about doing that. I think this would take me literally weeks, but I think to me, it's really fucking funny. But I think it's one of those things where I find it really fucking funny. I would spend 2 weeks working on it, and there'd be like three other people in the world who would find it funny and would never look at it. Okay, so it's like, I think Tchaikovsky would work well for this. Yeah. Like, take a Tchaikovsky piece, like March Slav, and do a lyrics version. And it's just like, the lyrics on screen, just like, in time with the music, and like small and big, and like high and low, depending on, and animated and stuff. Like, I would find that fucking hilarious. Like, Tchaikovsky lyrics version.
No, I'd say do that. I think that'd be, at the very least, it's a project, that's for sure.
It's a fucking project, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, if anyone's wondering what this in the background is, it's a fanny pack.
Yes. When they first became a thing in the 90s here,
yeah.
They very quickly became a thing of mockery, right?
Yeah.
But now, a friend of the show, Danny, she wears them. As a young person.
Yeah.
And that sort of like...
Yeah, young people were. Like,
I think I was just prejudiced against them because it was like a cultural thing that I hadn't questioned. Like, they're silly.
Yeah.
They're incredibly practical.
Yeah. And does she wear them around the waist or around the shoulder?
Waist.
Okay.
Yeah, trad style.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I would also... I would put phone holsters in the same category. They are a thing of mockery.
Mm.
But it's such a sensible way to store your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have a backpack. I tend to keep things in backpacks. They're not obviously as accessible.
No, it's quite awkward.
You know, the reason I do, I've been in the world of fanny packs lately is because as a bus driver, you need something to keep your change in, or bank, as Danny would say. And float. Yeah, float. And we do. And not all bus drivers keep their own floats because...
Can I just interrupt? For any North Americans watching fanny pack, bum bag.
Yeah. No, fanny pack's the Americanism. Bum bag is the British.
Which one were you saying?
Fanny pack.
Oh, you were saying fanny. Oh, I didn't need to do that then. Okay, for any British people watching.
Yeah, translation.
Bum bag. Mm. We say bum. I can literally forget between words which one we say.
Bum bag sounds, I don't know, it's fine, but it just, fanny pack seems more.
Bum bag sounds worse.
Bum bag.
I mean, it doesn't, for starters, it doesn't go on your bum.
It does if you turn it around.
But you don't.
But then Americans call it a fanny pack. It doesn't go on your fanny because Americans' fanny is...
Yeah, well, it goes on your British fanny.
Well, look. Yeah. Close enough, I guess.
On that side.
That side. Okay, yeah.
On the fanny side.
On the fanny. Okay. What, like a knob pouch?
Twat pack.
Twat pack. Twat pack. Oh, beautiful. Because when I started the job, they gave me a metal tray that hooks on in the bus, and then you do. And back in the days when most people would be paying by cash, that was a great option because you sort your money out, then you carry it with you everywhere you go, pay in at the end of the day. In the olden days, where more people used to pay with cash, people would pay in periodically on their break and stuff like that, so they weren't carrying ridiculous amounts of cash with them. But nowadays, when we take in like 100 quid a day, because it's all either cards, a lot of bus passes, smart cards, apps, all that kind of stuff, cash is, you know, some parts people still pay with cash, and that's fine. Putting it in a fanny pack makes a lot more sense to me because you never forget it because it's attached to you. You can leave your tray on the bus and you're just fucked. Yeah. It fits in my backpack a lot better as well. Those big metal trays, if you're trying to like jam it into a backpack, they're metal. They've got hooks and shit on.
They have corners.
corners, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So this, you can just sort of like roll it up. This isn't the one I use though. This is a failed prototype. It's too much. It's got several pockets, all this kind of thing. I actually ended up going for an old one of Rosie's that was just a cheap one that she got on Amazon a long time ago. But it fits the role of it nicely because there's lots of weird things that I like about it. Like, so for example, the one that I've got that I use, not only does it have the clip here, which is nice and useful, but it's very easy to like make it longer, make it tighter. Because if I'm sitting down on the bus, I tend to like to loosen it a little bit. It, you know, makes the pouch more accessible. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not at risk of leaving it anywhere. But then if I'm getting up and walking around, just tighten the strap, good to go. This one has a great, you know, adjustable, but once you've adjusted it to the spot that you need, it's kind of hard to adjust it again. I was doing adjustable quick, not adjustable firm, as it were. Also, only
I'm going to blow your mind with something I learned about again from Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
In chat.
Okay, let's have a look. Oh, those things. Yep, those things are an option. Yep.
I did remember a thing. Yeah. Coin belt, change belt.
Yeah, change belt. Some people use them.
Seems more cumbersome to me.
Yeah, it is more cumbersome. Yeah, I just need, again, if you're working with a lot of money, you know, and also as well, like the thing is with a bus, right? Is once you've taken payment from someone, they then have to go and sit down on the bus. So that gives you a couple of seconds to settle yourself before driving off, because you can't just, you know, zoom off when people are just, you know, especially when they're a bit older or you know, harder.
Would you, I think when we were talking about buses a while ago in the group chat, like several people said that like you just can't pay in cash anymore on buses where they are. Would you prefer to go cashless? Would that make your job easier or?
Honestly enough, I wish, when someone pays in cash, especially if they're using the correct change, but if they're just, you know, but like if it's like £5 for a £3 ticket or whatever, that's fine as well. Mm. You know that that's good and you're good to go. Cards get declined. The thing is nowadays, what I've noticed is that if you have a bank with a bank like Monzo, like an online bank, you can sort your money into lots of little sub-current accounts, they call them pots. So a lot of people will not have like enough money in their current account, so they'll then be on their phone going, oh, I've got to change the money over. Cash is a lot less of a faff. A lot of people think, oh, it's convenient.
I mean, it's something that gets talked about a decent amount, but I think it's really important. Like the more we make these things, you know, touch and screens and stuff, like the less human interaction you're having, which I don't think is good for us.
No, I don't.
I know people in general, like younger generations, have become more default antisocial. Like they don't want to talk to people, but like I think it's a healthy, even just those minimal interactions at shops and stuff.
Yeah,
they're important for our well-being.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's you know, we are humans. We are social animals. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And also, okay, it makes you understand. To get too much, but like labor is happening.
Yeah,
the part of the thing with the screens and self-checkout is it invisibilizes the labor.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. Very socialist, but very good point. Yeah, it is kind of... I totally get you. Like, when you're a bus driver, people recognise that because they see you working all the time.
Yeah.
So you get... I'm not going to lie. I kind of like the respect that comes with being a bus driver. It's a job where people respect you quite a lot.
Well, it's respect. It's not... Like, when we think of, like, wanting respect or whatever, it's usually positional.
Yes.
They respect, you know, people respect you because you have power over them, and you know, the kind of people who want respect because they have power over people, whereas you're being respected for what you do.
Yes.
Which is a cleaner, a nicer form.
Yeah. Like it's a,
again, I don't know. Your labor is being respected.
Yeah.
Your expertise and. You
know. I don't want to use the word gratitude, but people, you know, people are grateful for you driving them to places, you know. Mm. It's all right. And also, one of the things I quite like is that bus fares are actually pretty cheap, even now.
Sorry, you've reminded me of, I know that the certain, I think it's a bourgeois thing. I think it's like a desire to be sophisticated. Like, but people sneer at people who clap at the end of a film. And clap when the plane lands. I've never been in a plane. But I know that middle class people sneer at people who clap when the plane lands. But like you're clapping, first of all, it's a fucking miracle that you're flown into the plane and it actually fucking landed. Like you're clapping just, you know, I've fucking survived.
Yeah.
But, you know, the pilot, the crew.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice thing to clap for things like that.
Do you know, I was a person that sneered. Not sneered, but I was like, But actually...
Well, that's the yokels, like...
Yeah, but also, like... that's a fair point, actually. You are expressing a degree of gratitude and...
And again, in the cinema, it's like, why are you clapping the film? Like, the director's not there. But, you know, the projectionist, the all the labour that happens to keep the cinema running and the people who serve you and, like, blah, blah, blah.
It's, I've never been in a film where people have clapped.
I think it used to happen when I was a kid. I don't think it even happened in my, like, 20s. The last time I went to a cinema in, like, in my early 20s, I don't think it was happening at that point. And it's a little bit sad. It's kind of nice when everybody clapped.
Like, I guess
I don't like clapping. I wish it was the you know, the deaf clapping with the I prefer that actually, but I don't like it's too sharp a noise. But
yeah, no, yeah. Is it other thumbs up? There's a lot. Do you know in the world of bus driving, a lot of thumbs up.
yeah. Drivers in general, right? Yeah.
Just you know, hey, thumbs up. I sometimes do it. I've got, like, you know, like in the car, you've got a little, give a little wave to say thank you, whatever. But if I'm actually expressing a genuine thank you, they get a thumbs up. If you've done something specifically that you didn't have to do and you've made my life a bit easier, thumbs up.
That's nice. It's nice to get it. Again, it's human interaction. Nice.
Yeah. It's not too bad. Back into work tomorrow. I got a few nice routes down to Hereford. So I got Hereford in the middle of the day on a Monday, which is nice because those are the kind of routes where only old people take them for a nice day out. And those are the, I've got a bit of a
prejudice here, which I think is kind of interesting. When like counties like Herefordshire and what are the other nearby counties?
Worcestershire.
Gloucestershire?
Yeah, Gloucestershire. Yeah,
like all those counties. I just think farming counties, there's nothing there.
I mean,
the irony being that I live in Staffordshire, which is everybody else farming county, nothing.
I'll tell you one thing I have come to loathe on the buses though. Friday traffic. My God, people are mental on a Friday. Friday afternoon, people are just animals. It's horrible. A lot of the time of day, people.
This is a YouTube series waiting to happen. Actually, bus driver drives a bus for like a week in like different cities around the world, like Rome. You'd be like, what the fuck are they doing? British bus driver in Rome. What are the other like reputed like horrible cities for driving where everybody's a nutbag?
Well, I mean, London ain't great.
I'd watch that. I think London is so ordered though compared to some other like British people just in general. We just like, you know, queuing and order.
Calcutta. And like those things. Bus driver in Calcutta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like Mumbai or
We should also if I'm a producer and you're, you know, the star, we should also plan this around where the food is good. So Calcutta, great. Rome, great.
What about New York? I don't know what the food's like in New York. They talk about it a lot.
New York's got... I kind of fucking hate... Like, there's a point in modernity where New York took over Paris as the place that is the romantic place for artists and writers and stuff like that. There's so many novels now and films where, like, they romanticize the fuck out of New York. And it's deep... Danny and I have taken to saying... Because this is sometimes a line you see in, like, reviews by shitty writers. It's like, it's almost like New York is a character in the film. Anytime you're watching a film set in New York, one of us will say that and we'll laugh at it. But yeah, I just hate that, the pretension. New York looks like a living fucking nightmare.
I don't know, because in America, you've got like suburban deserts, haven't you, right? Houses, no real facilities, barely any shops. You've got to drive 40 minutes to get to the shops. New York actually seems like one of those places where you could almost live as a pedestrian and... survive.
I think that's what people like about it, yeah, and I do see that. In that sense, it's a bit more like a European city, maybe, because it's older, it's one of the older cities.
Yeah.
But it's just so vertical. It's just like you're in this, you know, you're in these canyons, essentially, of vertical, and that makes me, even in, like, central London, that makes me deeply uncomfortable. I don't like, LA looks like a nightmare in other ways, but LA has, like, a lower feel.
Yeah.
Like, it's lots of spread out, and I'd much prefer, I don't like, I think I get very claustrophobic with the Yeah, feeling in a man-made canyon or a natural canyon. I'm not a fan of canyons.
Okay, interestingly enough, yeah. What about the Y Valley?
Also, never been. Never okay. been down that.
It's more of it's a valley, not so much canyon.
Yeah. We don't really have canyons. We have gullies.
Yeah.
Also, Grand Canyon. You know, in the American romantic mythos, like the Grand Canyon is the one thing that you have to go and see. This like natural wonder.
I'd like to see
it. But whenever it's just a fucking hole. It's just a big hole. That's all.
Big fucking hole. And it took a long time to make. And you can see all of the layers of like sedimentation or whatever it is.
I can see that in a quarry.
Oh, quarries can be fun. It's just the king of quarries.
I mean, it's okay. Yeah, I don't find big holes in the ground that interesting.
They are.
In movies and stuff. Like, often it's the culmination of a movie. Like, they get to the Grand Canyon and that's the thing they've been, whatever. And it's just like, I mean, maybe it's more magnificent in person, but I don't think it would be. But it's just you're just looking at a big fucking hole. Well,
I mean, you've seen. I don't know. Anyone been to the Grand Canyon who listens? Is it as good as they say? Is it better?
I'm most interested is anybody's been to the Grand Canyon and agrees with me that it's just a big fucking, not somebody who's just like nature's bored, because like, I love natural phenomena.
Yeah.
But for me, it's woodlands. Woodlands is a thing.
I'm living in a forest now. It's kind of like, oh, but it's just trees. It's just trees.
I'm so envious of people. Like people whose houses are just in the woods. I mean, like, I don't mean like a cabin in the woods, but you know, just like,
yeah,
you can look out the windows and you just see woodland. It's like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So jealous.
Although a lot of those houses are an absolute money pit.
I'm sure, yeah.
Because you can't really build houses that way anymore, planning permission and all that kind of stuff. Like all the woodlands.
I'm thinking of America. Like Danny's parents, their house is just like straight, like right straight out of the door, just like woods. You know, natural woods.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there are some, you know, the occasional place that we do that here. But yeah,
I mean, in the UK, we don't have any wilderness. Tiny pockets. We've got a lot of farmland, which is a man-made environment, obviously. But like our forests, you know, we cut down all our forests like 1,000 years.
Well, was it like the Bronze Age or something like that?
We got going on that pretty fucking quick.
Yeah.
I mean, Middle Ages really is, wasn't it?
I think I read somewhere the Bronze Age was awful to our forests, but I can't remember where I read that.
Well, I think I mean, it definitely got started then, but there's no. Well, I mean, you've got even Scotland. You would think of the mountainous, but even that's deforested. That used to be up to a certain element. Well, like forest. We have very little really natural landscape here.
Yeah. People look at even like some of the Brecon Beacons and stuff, and they go, "Oh, isn't it beautiful?" and stuff like that. But there's not that many trees over a lot of the hills. But a lot of it's just been cut down and never reforested.
It's the Peak District National Park here, like on my doorstep, and we used to go up there, and it's beautiful, but it's all fields.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why it doesn't naturally reforest is because we herd sheep on there, and sheep are really bad for eating, acorns and stuff like that, they're not as great for wildlife as like you look at a big field full of sheep just hanging out, you think, oh, that's beautiful nature and stuff. Yeah. But it's like,
there's nothing natural about that.
Yeah, not really, no.
I mean, we are part of nature, blah, blah, blah. But that is like, distinguishing man-made from natural.
Yeah. It's a lot more man-influenced at the very least.
Danny can go out in America, she can go out, she can drive out to a place where it is literal wilderness, untouched natural wilderness for hundreds of miles, maybe not hundreds of miles, but very long distance in every day, possibly hundreds of miles in every day.
Yeah, no, definitely hundreds of miles, I reckon. Yeah.
Insane.
And lakes, they've got a great lake game in the States as well.
Yeah, a lake, that's just a hole with water in it, isn't it? It's a big puddle.
You just don't like holes.
I'm not a fan of it. I used to love digging holes as a kid, like making a hole, that's fun, but just look, if somebody else made a hole, you're just like...
Would you go and see a bottomless pit?
Oh, I'd want to jump in.
It calls to you, doesn't it? It's just like...
Yeah. That's part of my problem with heights is like, I think people often miss, and I don't know, I think this is true of some people who have a fear of heights, because I have a very profound fear of heights. But the problem is, I want to jump off. Like, I would feel safer. I don't like being up there. Jumping off would be an improvement, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I kind of know. I think doesn't everyone feel a little bit like that? Like,
I think everybody has a little bit of an urge, but for me, it's like I'm terrified up there, but I'm not afraid of falling off, because falling off, I will no longer be up there. That would be an improvement.
It isn't the falling off that kills you. It's the hit in the ground.
Gotcha.
You know, you could go as fast as you like. It's the stopping is the problem. That's when it, yeah. Oh, I'll tell you, going back to on the buses as well, on a slightly more serious note, one thing that really has hit home to me is how fucking dangerous motorbikes are. Mm. I am kind of surprised that we even, like, allow that anymore.
Yeah. So I've just been watching a series on YouTube called Tip to Tip China.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's two American, I think they're Twitch streamers, but they're not too, at least in these videos, they're not too Twitch streamery.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have traversed China from the south, essentially, up to Inner Mongolia.
Yeah, yeah.
On motorbikes, two of them on motorbikes. Mm. And in China, in certain cities, they just don't allow motorbikes.
Oh.
And they also don't allow them on the highways.
Any highway.
For safety reasons. Yeah, I think it's... I'm not sure it's every highway, but I think it's most... But it's also... I think it also... Well, they learn towards the end of the journey. Like, in China, laws like that, you just break them until you get caught. Like, a lot of the motorcyclists were just like, yeah, let's go on the highway. But yeah, it's they just ban... But also, you don't have to wear a helmet, it seems, or at least people weren't. But yeah, no, watching these... So it took them like 15 days or something like that to go all the way across China, or bottom to top China. And I was kind of just amazed they didn't die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of motorcyclists that just overtake in ridiculously dangerous ways. Like,
I saw a motorcycle, this was many years ago, but I just happened to be looking out the window onto the road, and it was pitch black. And a motorcyclist just bombing down the road and just hit a parked car.
Wow. Because
obviously the parked car lights are off, it's dark, the street lighting's not great. They just hit this parked car and they went off the bike like this and did a somersault and landed on their ass. They were perfectly fine, actually. But like, yeah, it's terrifying.
I mean, I did not, 2 days ago, I literally just saw someone die on a motorbike.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. Just like, it just happened.
Yeah,
and it's like, but every like week or so, there's like a really bad, like, you know, accident that happens.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems like one of those things that should be illegal.
Because also as well, it's like, I know that there's this like concept of like, well, it's their life in their own hands. They're responsible, right?
Yeah.
But also if you hit a motorcyclist and kill them, the driver has to like live with that on their conscience.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like that's going to drive some people to suicide, right? Like, that's
I'm sure. Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah,
it's not just the motorcyclist in question that is being, you know.
In an urban setting,
yeah.
Like, are the speeds high enough to like? Because I would think like if I weren't you know mental in the way that I am, and I lived in like a city, I think I'd want a scooter.
I've never seen a scooter in a really bad accident. That's not to say they happen. It's usually the bigger bikes.
Because you've got to use it in an urban setting.
Yeah.
And a scooter can't go fast enough that your speed is the problem. I would.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care whose fault it is. I just don't want the people to die, you know?
Like, oh, no, no, I'm not talking about fault. I'm just talking about, you know, the likelihood of, you know, I assume, like, in a city where, yeah, I mean, I guess fatal motorbike accidents happen in a city. The thing is, I've not been out into the world. There's no. Cities are like 30, right?
Yeah.
All
right. Well, in Wales, it's 20.
Oh, it's 20, yeah. So I assume at that speed, you can't have a fatal crash, can you?
Probably not. You're probably generally okay, I guess. Mm. Yeah. I don't see scooters getting any kinds of accidents at the... You know, motorcycles, yes. Usually on dual carriageways or something. And, you know, sure, let's just... You know, I know motorcyclists tend to say that cars are always the problem. They're never looking out for them and whatever. And yeah, like becoming a bus driver has definitely hit home how bad car drivers are. Like, you have to give them so much leniency and you know, all that kind of stuff. So I can totally understand, but at the same time, I've seen a lot of crazy motorcyclists, right? That's just a thing. But also, even roads that, I mean, statistically, like, motorcyclists make up the largest segment, like something like 40 or 50% of motor fatalities.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
And they're 1 in 200 road users, which is remarkably dangerous.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I guess over time, like, cars have just been made, you know, even compared to like the 70s or the 80s, yeah. Like cars are so safe now. Like, you, what would have been a fatal crash in the 70s or 80s is now,
yes,
but, you know, airbags, crumple zones, you know, all like,
well, safe
like,
for the driver, swerve. Certainly.
Yeah. I was going to say, but like, yeah, for a motorbike, you can't really do it. You know, you can't have a crumple zone on a motorbike. It's meaningless. An airbag on a motorbike, I would think it's meaningless.
Yeah. But also, one of the things, and I've seen this on the internet sometimes when I used to like look at people's opinions on the internet a bit more, a lot of people were saying, oh, we should raise the speed limit because the brakes on cars are better than they've ever been. And yes, we got a modern car in the drive, as in like a car that was made this year. Yeah, the brakes are fucking phenomenal on them. The ones on electric cars, excellent. But you know what? Buses still take a fucking long time to stop, as the lorries. Motorbikes as well. They don't have the weight behind them to stop. Like,
also, so, you know, weather
still doesn't matter.
I also think, like, why are we, don't, like 70s? I used to think that way, honestly, but I think now, like, 70's fine. Why are you in such a hurry?
Yeah.
So we need to take the pressure off, you know. Get rid of capitalism. Take the pressure off for everybody to be everywhere as quickly as possible. Mm. Enjoy the fucking journey.
Yeah, but also you got to bear in mind as well when it comes to road laws is that you've got to set the road laws for your worst possible driver. Mm. As in someone who's passed their test on day one, driving a road they've never driven before in bad road conditions. That's who the rules have to accommodate for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a big fan of the 20 miles an hour and built-up zones. But also another thing as well... that
also
we've got
pedestrianizes as much as possible.
Oh, it definitely pedestrianizes it. It makes it safer for kids to play in the street, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But also one of the things that it does help as well is dealing with the sheer amount of traffic that's on the roads nowadays. Because back in the 70s, there were substantially fewer cars on the road. That's like now, there are just cars everywhere. They're parked everywhere as well. Yeah. Parking is a nightmare. People park in just ridiculous. I mean,
the old man thing that we've complained about before, but you know, everybody drives their kids to school now.
Oh, fucking awful. Also, the thing that blows my fucking mind about this, right, is that there are a lot of schools that are quite difficult to get in and out of to drop the kids out. Why not just drop your kids a mile or half a mile away and let them walk in? Drop them off in a much less congested area. They get a little bit of exercise, chat with their friends, whatever.
I assume it's some combination of, first of all, like I think schools have been consolidated a lot. Like smaller local schools have been closed in favor of, you know, more distant consolidated schools. That combined with just like this sense of fear that parents have. Like, you know, if my kid goes out alone, they will die. You know, like, which is silly.
Yeah. It's, I mean, they've all got fucking cameras with them now. Like, you can't get you can't get away with anything. You know, we've GPSed all our kids. Like, seriously, like, it's fine. Or let them catch the bus. The bus, CCTV on all the buses. They couldn't be safer on a bus.
I mean, we used to get a school. I mean, my middle school was walking, my, you know, first school, middle school walking distance. My high school was it's like 6 miles away. So it was bus in the morning, you know, bus there, bus back. That's it was a school bus. You know.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing, actually. The kids are nowhere near as bad on the bus as I feel they were at my age. Kids, they're fine.
I don't think we were.
Maybe we weren't. I don't know. The way that people go on, you'd think that they were feral, but they're lovely.
I mean, that's, some people, when they get old, they just like complaining about young people. And
they do.
A thing that's existed since humans. young people are fine.
Yeah.
I think what that stems from, honestly, most of it, is feeling left out of their culture. And rather than just going, well, you know, it's for the kids, I don't need to understand it, feeling like slighted in some way. Like, I'm being excluded from something, therefore I will attack it.
It could be that you just, when you get old, you just like peace and quiet, and you want everyone else to be peaceful and quiet, and you just like, there's a little, because I'm a little bit like that. I try and fight it, but there's a little bit about me that's like, I just want everyone to be quiet and just like
generally, yeah, but like peaceful. When school kids walk past on the way to school, and when I hear them being like raucous and like taking the piss, and like it's like it makes me happy.
It's totally fine. Yeah. And they deserve to be a bit raucous. Like, it's fine. You've got that energy. Yeah. You've got that youthfulness. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Like, I know that the part of me that is grumpy old man is not necessarily a bit I should embrace. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think as I get older, I just appreciate quiet a little bit more. Maybe that's just a thing.
Well, the thing that does bother me is like men in their 40s. On a Friday night, having pissed up at the pub, and then walking like that, just come on, that's a 20s activity. Don't carry that on to 40.
I got to be honest though, I'm pretty anti-alcohol these days.
It's another thing that wouldn't be legal if it were a new invention.
Cannabis, fine. Yeah. Totally okay for cannabis. Yeah. Yeah. Probably would be fine with a bit of ecstasy, mushrooms, most of the vaguely softer drugs.
You and I would probably want to make all drugs legal, right?
I would certainly be on the side of treat them as a health issue rather than a criminal issue. Yeah. Like, yeah. Cokeheads, no. I don't want to live in a world with cokeheads. I'm sorry.
Oh, being around somebody on coke is... one of the worst. It's worse than being around somebody drunk, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, no, yeah, they're drunk, but they're amped up, so it's like So I maybe coke might stay illegal. Heroin definitely should be treated as a health issue.
Yeah,
because people on heroin don't cause trouble. They just
no.
They're just caught in a trap, really, which is sad. Yeah. I don't know enough about a lot of drugs. Like LSD, that's probably fine, right? There's a lot of I think I need to do more research on some of the drugs I know less about, because I don't want drugs. Basically, if it makes people violent or inclined to be more violent,
I'm not illegal. Maybe, or certainly not illegal to use. I think you can keep some drugs illegal to deal and illegal to produce, but not illegal to use.
I would want mechanisms to stop them, whether or not that's rehab or what. I don't think it needs to be punished. I just think it needs to be stopped.
It needs to be treated.
Like, I just don't want it to happen. Obviously, the violence you treat as a violent crime, but. Yeah, if a substance is inclined to make someone more violent, I would be more sympathetic to keeping it illegal or whatever.
I think with booze, I think it's too late, but it's too culturally embedded, I think.
Yeah. But I do see a lot of people. Do you know what I see a fair amount of, and I hope I don't get in any kind of blowback for this, I shouldn't, is you get people that run like a little country pub out in the middle of nowhere, and they're all like, rah, 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 stop the boat, send them back. And then they're also all, don't build houses here, don't build houses here, no house building, no. Pub culture is dying, where is everyone? Why is no one coming to our pubs? Because you don't want anyone in the fucking country, maybe, that one kind of gets me a little bit. I think I find it irritating on a, an ironic basis that, you fundamentally just want to live in the 70s again, where people could drink and drive. Because having a pub in the middle of nowhere, people don't drink and drive as much as they used to.
I mean, it's always the period that's always romantic is the 50s, isn't it? I think, it's in America, it's certainly the 50s because
Prohibition or post prohibition.
Yeah. And assuming you weren't black and in the South or, a woman, it was a great time.
Yeah.
An affluent,
Yeah, but I got to be honest, it's one of those British cultural things. I think, you know what, maybe it should evolve,
Did I mention, I think I may have mentioned this already on a thingy, but I can't remember how I came across it, but in the 50s in America, I think it carried on to the 60s, they had a government department of, I can't remember what it's called, but it was something along the lines of like a government department of nutrition and home economics.
Oh, okay.
And it was a government department. It was headed by women. It was the largest employer of women at the time in America. And they did stuff like they put out this is post-war food food was, you know, scarce in some situations. So they basically put out they did a radio show about home economics, and it was like recipes that, you know, cheap things that can be turned into, you know, tasty, nutritious meals and that kind of thing. But they also literally sent women out into communities to teach other women about, you know, home economics, you know, how to, because it was a lot of sewing your own clothes and and a government department basically of crafts, essentially, like home crafts. And it was like that America could have been cool, you know what I mean? Carried on down that trajectory, that could have been great. Well, it was shut down in like the 70s or something.
Oh, okay. Do you know who shut it down?
Can't remember who it was under.
Before Reagan, then, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the rot started way before Reagan. He was just pinnacle.
I guess.
The thing that's often seen, in economic history as the beginning of the neoliberal era was the Volcker shock, and that was under Carter, who was a Democrat.
I guess. I don't know. Carter's quite fondly remembered, isn't he?
No.
Is he not? I mean, one term,
no,
right?
No. Well, he's remembered as sort of...
No, sorry. Okay. He's fondly remembered today as in, like, people... Well, he's dead now, but...
Well, he's remembered fondly by very middle-of-the-road kind of, like, Democrat voting kind of... Because he was very inoffensive.
He built houses and stuff, didn't he, when he was after his presidency?
Yeah. But he was chosen to appease, because this is the point where you've still got the because historically the Democrats were the party of Southern slavers and essentially manual workers in the North, which is a weird coalition.
Yeah.
But it's essentially the anti financialized coalition, and the Republicans were the party of emancipation of slaves. And the sort of the mercantile things in the North. So, you know, like small business, you know, like, I mean, which they still have. So the Democrats were very much the racist party. And I think the 1970s is really like the tail. I mean, it transitioned before that, but like the tail end, like the Southern Democrats were still essentially like a racist bloc. And Carter was chosen to appease the racist Southern Democrats because he was enough in that direction to appease them while also blah, 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 blah. So Carter's not also he's remembered as a very ineffective president.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Volcker shock is seen, I think, by most people who want to put a distinct modern point is seen as the beginning era.
Okay, that tracks. Also, you do realize we've just hit an hour and we haven't actually talked about Esoteric Ebb.
I haven't even mentioned Esoteric Ebb. So do you want to get into it?
Okay, so I finished the game. But,
well, first of all, we should say this is going to be spoilers.
All spoilers.
Like, if you don't want spoilers for Esoteric Ebb, and I would say it's the kind of game where I'm not spoiler sensitive, but it's the kind of game where you should avoid spoilers, I think.
Yeah, go and play the game. It's worth it. Really enjoyed it. And then come back and listen to us if that's the case. Or if you're never going to play it, I don't know, listen, whatever. I don't care. I'm not your mum.
Actually, before we get onto Esoteric Ebb, could we do a little bit of pause? I'll go and I need water for tea. And also, I may need to take a shit.
Okay, and I'll go and grab a cup of tea then. Okay, and we're back. So, Esoteric Ebb. Oh, my hair's just not even, it's just gotten worse. Okay. Really like the game. Mm-hmm. Lots of spoilers, all that kind of business. I played with intelligence and charisma, and I became an apolitical force of nature.
I played with dexterity and wisdom, and became a dick-ass rogue and kind of a druid.
I think that's going to be my second playthrough character, wisdom and dexterity.
Yeah, it's fun. The dexterity in particular, like just being able to steal absolutely everything, is great. It just frees you up in a lot of ways.
Okay, yeah. So did you ever get a tier, the angel, as a companion?
Yes, but very, very, very late. Just on the day that I went into the thingy.
So you didn't try and recruit her, she just showed up?
No, I did. No, after you mentioning that, because I think what's the check on that conversation? Is it a strength check, I think?
I thought it was a charisma. Oh, the...
Yeah.
Which conversation?
To recruit her, basically.
Oh, I did it on a charisma check.
It was a charisma check.
There might be other checks. It might be other... Yeah, but...
After you talking, because it was just a very high charisma check and my charisma was low. So what I think what I did after talking to you is I went to saw what the check was, and then I was going to ask whether you did this at all. Actually, I just put on all my charisma gear.
Yeah,
to get my charisma up to a point where it was even possible.
Mm.
And then I did. I was half thinking about I'll reload this if I don't make it, but I think I got lucky. It was
yeah.
Did you ever switch gear to?
Yes. Towards the end, when I started getting really good charisma, I then started wearing dexterity gear to try and
just balance things out.
Balance things out a little bit more. Yeah. Sometimes I had.
That's another interesting thing, because I all the way through I just maxed wisdom and dexterity.
Mm.
Like at the end, my wisdom is 30. I just maxed those to the expense of everything else. My strength for the second half of the game was one.
Was one?
One, yeah. And if your stats go down to, if any of your stats go down to zero, you die. So, yeah, I was, my strength was non-existent, basically.
Wow, okay. Because there was gear that was taking strength away from you?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. a lot of the gear that was giving me, like, you know, plus threes on dexterity and wisdom was like, yeah, a lot of my gear was minus strength. Yeah, my constitution was very low as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you want to play a constitution and strength character, don't you?
Yeah, which I have started.
Oh, okay. How different is it on your initial...
It's quite, I mean, it's the same, it's fundamentally the same thing, but like, yeah, it feels quite different. Yeah, you do, the conversations go differently. I can do different things, obviously.
Yeah, that's to be honest, because I almost feel like I can't rate the game without knowing what the alternatives are. It plays out differently for different characters. How much of an adventure I made it my own versus, you know.
Yeah, because that's always unclear. And I think I was going to say that I think in the best games it's unclear.
Mm.
I think when it's super clear that you made a choice, it feels very gamey. But when it's just like that's the game and you don't know how different it is, I think that's the best.
Well, I did. I did have a. What did I look up after I finished the game? I looked up some of the walkthrough stuff, and they were really complicated because it's like, well, if you get, there's a lot of roles that happen behind the scenes. So it's like, if this is a role and this is a role, this is a role, then you get these options of dialogue or da da da. And it's like, okay,
God, writing a walkthrough for this game would be horrible.
Yeah, because I think there were some quests I locked myself out of because I not screwed up, but I did things differently in other parts of other quests. But there were, I think I got stuck once or twice, and I did consult a forum or two on particular things. And someone said, okay, so how do I, because one of them was like, how do I discover the morgue in the Undercity or something like that? Crypt, that's it. And then someone said, oh, well, you can just get the detect secret spell that comes with the dwarf's axe. But then some people, and then the reply was, oh, well, that's kind of silly if that's the only way you can do it. And then other people start chiming in and go, oh, no, if your perception is high enough. Or was it perception or something like that?
I think that'd be based on... No, I think it's wisdom, isn't it? I think it comes from... Because I just walked down that corridor and there was a door there.
Oh. So it's either dexterity or wisdom,
On my second playthrough, I wanted to go there
to
beat that skeleton because I noticed there's an achievement for beating the skeleton without picking up Snell, and I've got high strength on my second playthrough. And I went there. There's just no door there.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you need so for that case you need the spell that comes with the dwarf's pickaxe.
You can also get there via the temple through the underground in the temple.
But how do you get the duck to give you the key?
Oh, I just pickpocketed it.
Oh, okay. Because I mean, the thing is, I went up to the duck. Is he called the duck on your playthrough?
Yeah.
Okay, and he just gave it to me, but I don't know why. I tried to open the door. The door was locked. I went over to him. I asked about the door. He just tossed the key in my direction. I thought that seems pointless unless there are avenues of that quest where people don't get the key.
Yeah, there's lots of situations where I'd stolen something off somebody and then have a conversation with them, and then they go like, "I would give you this, but it seems you've already stolen it off me."
Oh, okay.
It was like at least three or four situations where that happened.
Yeah. In fact, actually, in Deus Ex Invisible War, there was this phenomena where if you completed a quest before someone gave it to you, and then you go to the quest giver, they go, oh, well, I was going to pay whoever was going to do it 300 credits yeah, anyway, yeah. So here, take them. Yeah. And it's
I
like
love that in Morrowind with the Morag Tongue.
Yeah, yeah,
you get,
yeah.
You get a what's it called? A writ to assassinate somebody.
Yeah,
and then you go, oh, I've already killed them, and they're like, what? Why? I guess I'll pay you half.
Yeah, which yeah, I always feel like, man, you needn't have paid, you know. But I think in Invisible War, but then this was an older era of games as well.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I put my a screenshot of my stats at the end of the game in. So you can see how deeply unbalanced my character is.
Okay, so what do we got here? We got level 5 you got dexterity. Oh, you really min-maxed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I really went hard on 2. Which I do think, because at the beginning, it's in any RPG, it's always like, does this RPG favor a balanced character, or does it favor going hard into a couple of things? And this
both.
I think it favors going hard.
No, I think it's both. I think it's both.
Really?
Yeah, I reckon
if you're middling on everything, I guess, yeah, it's a different playthrough, isn't it? You're going to fail. You're just going to fail some and win some. Whereas on my playthrough, there's no wisdom roll that I can fail.
Yeah.
Like technically on the face of it, if I roll a 1, you know, I've got plus 13 on my roll, right? So it would have to be, I'd have to roll a crit failure, but because of the, what they call the feats or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that's all that's ruled out. There's various things that's giving me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a feat that says if you get a natural 1, nothing bad happens or something like that, is it? Or you get to re-roll or something like that?
Yeah. But the way, yeah, there was literally no wisdom roll in the game that I could, unless I got incredibly unlucky. I'd say really same with deck, not quite the same with decks, but, you know, very close with decks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was obviously failing every strength roll.
Yeah.
Again, unless it was low and I got lucky. Like if a strength roll was obviously above 16, I could not.
Yeah. Yeah. Although there was one check I did, which was flirt with the Sphinx in the in the pub.
You did go to the Sphinx.
I did in the end. I didn't really do much because I picked up a riddle, but I couldn't really work it out.
The Sphinx was one of my favorite characters.
It was okay. I romanced her. Yeah. And that was a...
Did you successfully romance her?
Yes, 30. It was a 30 charisma skill check.
No, but the conversation after that, she sort of, like, you can succeed the role, but then she kind of brushes you off, but there's lots of choices. I wonder, is there a path through that where you actually romance?
Oh, I don't know. She sort of not brushed me off, but was like, it was a successful role. We didn't end up... Yeah. But also, who did I...
That's cute, but like...
Oh, but I romanced the orc lady there. The Free Strider Orc.
Oh, you mean the it's not a bugbear. Yeah, bugbear.
Bugbear. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I did that. I did that really early on. I impressed her by killing a lot of stuff in the dungeon.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not the bugbear. That's the one in the? Is it the Goblin Gardens?
Oh, sorry, Free Strider. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. The orc. Like. Oh. Yeah. No, I didn't like her.
I ended up romancing her, and then one of the final conversations was like, okay, so this date you're going to take me on, eh? So what's...
Well, on the bit after the after you come back, I romanced Etia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's great. I recommend romance. It was not like... I mean, when we say you romance, like, nothing happens. Like, there's no explicit... It's not The Witcher where you get a trading card or anything. Just the conversation happens, but... the conversation was really lovely. I really like that.
Did I romance Etia as well? Did I just romance everyone?
I did. I romanced the bugbear, the Sphinx, and Etia.
Okay. I did. I tried and failed with the bugbear because I think that's a different check or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it's a strength check, but I got... I killed so much stuff in the dungeon that it was so many minuses that it was actually a strength check that I could succeed.
So one of the things that you was surprised at was that I picked up, was there a key from Darrow, the coin, is it the coin master Darrow? The almost like the quest giver of the game.
Yeah. So day one, basically I had been awake for, I think I've been awake for an entire day, an entire night and into the next day.
Yeah.
And then I think I just Googled, like, can you just go forever without sleeping?
Yeah.
And apparently if you go for 48 hours without sleeping, you die unless you get a particular feat.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I've got to find a place to sleep. So I went to, and then I saw that it was an achievement for sleeping without getting the key from Darrow. So I was like, but I didn't want to spoil myself on where that was. So I searched around for anywhere else to sleep and I couldn't find anywhere. So I had to wait until Darrow was awake so that I could go and talk to him and get the key off. I hated Darrow. I chose all the anti-Darrow conversational options. I was just insulting him to his face.
Oh, okay. I think I was... Well, being an intelligent, charisma-based character, I was telling everyone what they wanted to hear. That was my...
Yeah, right, right.
That was my thing. Because there were a few options. I was like, hey, everyone loves apolitical people, don't they, you know? But I decided at the end who I was going to vote for. Because I liked that they actually just tell you. I thought what it was going to be was who you're going to vote for was going to be dependent on what your conversational topics.
Yeah, no, you can just choose freely at the end, can't you?
Yeah.
I think you can ask your intelligence who you should vote for, and I think it bases that on your conversation thing.
Okay. I put X's in all of the boxes because that's like the opposite of apolitical. I was like, super political. I'll vote for everyone.
Yeah, this is the thing I wanted to ask about. So during character creation, I chose, you can choose a background. Mm-hmm. And my background was something called like one friend. And the blurb was something like, every night you prayed for one thing. It never happened, but you may do. You prayed for a single friend, something like that. Mm. And I chose it for the stats. I didn't choose it for the narrative part.
What were the stats?
Wisdom and dexterity.
Oh, yeah, that was the back. Oh, yeah. And what did I pick? I picked...
Well, this is what I want to ask. So, and then at the end, Earth mentioned, during the conversation with Earth, he mentioned that one prayer to me. And my character is clearly a little bit embarrassed about it. And then in the voting place, Snell asks me about that, about what the prayer was, what the secret prayer was. And I tell him I prayed for a single friend. And obviously at that point in the game, Snell is your friend.
Yeah.
And my intention was to vote for everybody. But after that conversation... I voted for Snell. I was just like, he's my one friend. I love him.
You voted for Snell on the ballot card?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, also, actually, wait a minute. Okay.
So I was wondering, did your background come into play in the same way, or?
No, I voted, I said Snell was who I prayed to every night or something. My background, what was my background? I got to try and find the video now. All right. So, who did I, okay. Let's see. Class conflict. No, where do you pick it out? Oh, there it is. Right. Let's see. So, I'm choosing the stats now. So 17 charisma, 16 intelligence. Where do you do it? Right. So, and then it's the beginning of the game. Wait, it says, is it like crowd pleaser or something was what I chose. I didn't choose.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that says, inevitably, you ended up with the wrong crowd. You quickly picked up on the slang and radical terminology, doing anything to get real friends. So, yeah, charisma, intelligence, that makes sense.
Crowd,
so did that
yeah.
come into play during that, any point or during the thing with, because mine came in during the thing with Earth and then at the end, obviously.
I got the real friends thing as well. Like, I prayed for one real friend.
Oh, you had that as well?
Yeah.
Oh, so that didn't come from the background. I thought that came from the background.
Unless it came from the background, but it was also crowd pleaser. Because crowd pleaser is like doing anything to get real friends.
Yeah, yeah, right. So maybe they all feed into, that idea that's... Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Little weirdo.
At the end, I found that really touching. That was too... Like, I think it's well known that I'm someone, I cry easily at like TV shows and movies and stuff. And games, very rarely, but the ending of this game, I was in tears.
It was nice. Paladin Pawn is another one. Revolutionary Scribe, Dexterity and Intelligence. Yeah, I picked these based almost entirely on not the background, but on the bonuses they give you. Acolyte, 2 Strength, 1 Wisdom.
I liked it as a background as well, but like I did mainly choose it for the...
Little Weirdo is 3 Charisma. Yeah. And I don't know. I honestly don't know if it came into play. It's difficult to say. I didn't really...
From this conversation, it's becoming clear that like the paths are quite distinct, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the events are all, you know, the locations, the events, the characters are all the same, but like the way you navigate that does seem quite varied.
Yeah, yeah. So you never even went into the Water District very much, did you?
No, I didn't go at all. I spent my first 3 days were just spent in the underground.
It's the fun bit.
I think
yeah.
I mentioned right near the beginning, right at the beginning. So I dealt with the you come out of the place where you wake up,
mm-hmm.
And then there's the little kerfuffle going on in the square with the dwarves and the orc.
Yeah,
and then you walk down towards the garden.
Yeah,
and in that area there was a pipe, and I had an interaction with it and failed the roll and fell down the pipe into the dungeon.
Oh, okay. When did you come out?
You come out next to the miner dude, the archaeologist fellow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just fall down there, and then, So my first full day was just trying to get out of the dungeon, exploring the dungeon and trying to find a way out of it.
Okay.
Then my second day was entirely spent in the dungeon. So yeah, I really spent very little time above ground. In fact, yeah, really, my only notable interactions above ground were the newsstand, Darrow, and that's it. That's really it.
What do you mean by the newsstand?
You know, the newsstand on the sort of pier area. I just talked to him, and also I stole all of the magazines so I could, and they were good. They were good for like if I needed to change my stats for a certain role.
How do they work? Because I never interacted with the magazines.
Oh, they just go in the book slot, and they just give you pluses and minuses to various.
There's a book. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Did you ever repair your book?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
I repaired my book, and I never used it because it gave me. There were some like questions I asked about it or whatever that I think. That I think basically affect what the final bonuses are, but I don't think I ever used it because I think it was like charisma, and I was already winning all of the charisma rolls, so I didn't really feel like it was.
Yeah, right. So towards the end, it seems like you balanced it out, whereas I just went super extreme.
Yeah, but you can't overwin a roll, can you? Like you either win it or you don't, right?
No, but I just wanted to be. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was an efficient way to play, but I just wanted to be. I just wanted like any wisdom or dexterity. I just want to succeed it. I want no.
Yeah.
No.
How many shards?
At that point, I was just leaning into the idea of just being like super fucking wise and dexterous and like stupid and weak, and completely uncharismatic. I was enjoying that.
I find it odd that wisdom and intelligence are just entirely separated from each other.
I think they can be. I think this is something that comes up a lot, but I think they are different. I think you can be very stupid and very wise.
What's an example of someone who's very
intelligent? Okay,
I get it the other way around, right? So if you're very... Okay. So, like, do you know the American politician Ben Carson?
I don't think he's intelligent, but I get your point, yeah.
Well, I'm saying he allegedly is one of the best eye surgeons in the world, right?
Yeah.
But, like, we all saw him in a Republican primary. The guy's a fucking...
Yeah.
He is unwise.
Yeah.
So I would think of him as maybe that.
Well,
is
my example. My example for intelligent but not wise is virtually every Oxbridge graduate I've known.
Okay.
Like they're always like super, super intelligent, super smart, but just stupid in that other way. Yeah. The opposite, wise, but I think it's the kind of I've experienced it when I've done like manual labor job.
Yeah.
You got some old dude who's been on the job for a long time. You know, he knows people really well. Like he's got a good sense, like a lot of empathy. I mean, it's exactly how it is in the game, really. Yeah, it's an empathy based thing, and it's just not book smarts at all, but a ton of sort of like very good instincts about people and about a balanced view of things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Or maybe like a vicar.
I
know the vicars are sort of intelligent in the they have that ecclesiastical studies or whatever it is, you know, but like
and it's similarly like in a sort of stereotypical way, like a good social worker.
Very
very in tune, very very measured, but not not necessarily academically gifted or whatever.
Yeah, so we're sort of aligning intelligence with the more academically. Maybe even also more technically as well. Oh, okay. So, like, for example, high intelligent, low wisdom would be like a tech bro who's really good at coding and making the best software, but at the same time...
Well, I think they're low both. in reality, but I think they want to, yeah.
Oh, this, yeah, yeah, but I'm painting like an idea of, you know, do you know what I mean? Mm. I'm not talking about Silicon Valley tech bros. I'm talking more, maybe more like FOSS, the FOSS version of tech bros, where they're
I think they were very wise. I think if they weren't wise, they would have ended up as tech bros.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got a type of person in my mind. That's
you're not wrong with the tech bro thing. Yeah, I think it's
because a lot of tech, like everyone. Well, it's well documented that, say, for example, Mark Zuckerberg is a very like not a very good coder or a very mid level coder. You know, like But you know, he's the tech bros love him, don't they? Well, that particular segment of Silicon Valley tech bros, but they love anyone who's rich, don't they?
That's the thing, yeah. They'll pay homage to who they need to pay homage to. Whether they actually like them or respect them, I think, is another matter, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but okay, all right. So I've got an idea for like, yeah, all right. Someone who's so you were like okay, a wise.
So for example, the magazine I had in my book slot is +2 wisdom, -3 strength. So that was I was going all out on. Yeah, with my weapon is +3 dex, -1 constitution. My hat is +2 wisdom, -1 charisma, -1 constitution. Yeah, a bunch of stuff like that.
Oh, okay. So that could be quite good for if you know you're good. So if you, like, the thing is, certain roles, like dexterity roles, for example, you might know them coming up for, like, pickpocketing or breaking into somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
then
yeah,
you
yeah.
can load up on your dexterous things.
Yeah, I think that's a split in RPG gamers. My friend back in the day who used to play RPG games, like in Morrowind or whatever, he would have sets that he would put on. He would have his gear for selling stuff that just maxed out mercantile. And he'd have his gear for exploration and his gear for, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. I could never be asked to do that.
That's a lot
of work. I did
a
bit in this game. I did switch a bit in this game for a few encounters. But, yeah, I can't really be asked. Because you could do that in this game. You could be kind of good at everything just by switching gear.
Yeah, especially towards the end. Because the rolls are always D20s, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I really like that. I like the fact that nothing ever got too far away from you. Or that you could, you could see, a very level balanced
like
character.
Virtually everything was possible. You could get lucky, which is nice. That's something that's quite nice about the D&D system. I like that the game allows you to freely reload and try a roll again, because then it leaves it up to you whether that's like the right thing to do or not. And I did, I did it sometimes, but there were situations where the failure states are quite fun often. But also there was times where I felt like I was cheating myself. Like, it's pointless going through this game and just reloading and winning every... That's pointless. Like, I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. Also, one thing I think they did really well as well is some of the roles were so far down a dialogue tree that they really discouraged you from quick loading.
Yeah.
Which I think actually was probably quite a good mechanism there. You could save and reload if you wanted to, but...
But you've got to go through all this dialogue again and be very careful that you choose the same things. And
And even then, there were some dialogues that were like, dice roll here, dice roll there, dice roll again.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah. If that's like 3 different stats that you're weak on, then you're failing one of them.
I mean, I still ended up with a decent number of shards of jaw. Is that what they're called when you get to re-roll? So you could re-roll. You never used one.
First of all, I'm stealing from everybody. So I've got like... Actually, I put everything in deep storage at the end, but only because I saw that it was an achievement.
Oh, okay.
Let me get my stuff. I've got the game at the end point on now. Let's. I don't know the controls on keyboard. Is everything?
I ended up having a go on the controller. I've got the old Stadia controller.
It works really well. I think it worked better on a controller than it does on a mouse and keyboard for me, which is rare.
But I'm having a bit of second thoughts about my vertical mouse. Because it's like, so you hold it like that. I'm thinking, well, it's not too bad. But would I be more comfortable with a normal mouse? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I ended up with 33 shards of your.
Oh, okay, I had about like 24 or something. See, so they're not that rare. Like I got the impression that they were like a lot rarer.
Well, I was misled at the beginning of the game, and this is something that stuck in my head like a misconception. So on that, you know, that first hard roll on. The necromancer dude who in the place where you wake up.
Oh, the wisdom one, yeah.
Yeah. So next to him, it said like, it showed the shards of jaw thing, you know, if you fail the roll, with like a 12 or something next to it. And I was like, oh, that costs like 12 shards, and that's all I've got at the moment. I'm not going to do that. And then later in the game, I was like, God, these are getting expensive. These are like 20, 30. And I was, and it was literally, I think, in the last day of play that I was like, oh, that's how many I've got. And it just costs one. Like, I could have been doing that so much.
Did you ever find out? Did you ever find out about Viskin's? What's the deal with Viskin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know?
No, I never passed that check.
Oh, I don't know whether... You don't really get it from that check. You get it from that check and also talking to a lot of other people. You gradually piece it together. You might have got the thing that is the main thing, but there's a lot of detail to it. I don't think I got all of, but I got a decent amount of it.
Oh, what is
kinda,
it
I kind of don't want to say. I kind of want to leave you to... Should I say or...
I mean, is he undead? Is he a necromancer? Is he...
Yeah, so it's nothing really like profound, but he's a lich. He's an ancient lich.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he's got he's employing a bunch of people around that. So you know the alligator that you meet.
Yeah,
he's employing the alligator for Mr. I didn't really get to the bottom of why. And there's a bunch of other people around the city, weird people that he's employing to do whatever they're doing.
Did you kill the alligator?
No. I talked to the alligator.
Okay, was that wisdom checks or something?
Well, yeah, I mean, being very high, with my strength being one for a lot of the game and two at the end of the game, I couldn't really. When the option was fighting or talking, I always went for talking.
Oh, so you really rolled the strength right down to the bottom.
Oh, yeah. I could not fight things. There's like three encounters where I was forced to fight and I just bumbled my way through it. But yeah, no, all of the ones, like the troll.
Mm.
I mean, it's presented as a fight, but I did all the things to avoid fighting and defeat him another way. And with the I just talked to the alligator. Because the alligator has the, you can't complete the, did you get all the rats?
No, I couldn't find the last one.
Okay, I did, yeah, so he's the one you give the rats.
Yeah, no, I knew that.
Oh, did you get what's the word for being able to talk to people psychically?
Telepathy.
Telepathic, yeah. Did you get the telepathic ant?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. So I found a telepathic ant that had been separated from his colony, and he was experiencing individuality.
Oh wait, no,
yeah. Okay, I never found a place to turn that in or finish that or conclude that. Yeah,
but there's a whole bunch of quests that never opened up for me. It's a whole bunch of dots.
Oh, actually, could you show me your? If you load the game up, show me your questing screen at the end, because I finished very few quests, and there's a decent number that I never even like. They're just dots still.
Yeah, I'll show you all my bits and bobs then.
Love to see your bits.
I gotta load up Steam and all the bits. So it'll take a second. Yeah, I don't know what my next character's going to be though. Like tempted to do your character Wisdom, and yeah, maybe it'd be Wisdom.
I would suggest that at some point just do a high dexterity, just steal fucking everything because it's really freeing.
So that's yours. Okay, so let's do, esoteric. All right, load that one up. I wonder if there are any more companions that you can recruit. I bet there are.
That would be, I didn't meet anybody who seemed like they could be recruitable, but that would be cool.
Did you have Atir for the fight with the goblin?
The goblin?
Sorry, the troll.
No.
Okay.
No.
Right, so let's see. So
no, I got her very late.
Ah, okay. Right, I got to work out how I want to do this. Okay, can I? Right, okay, I'm going to load up my game. I can stream it to you, but I do you know the thing about Discord is that I don't think I. Yeah, see, it doesn't show. It doesn't quite show. Share stream audio, pop out stream, show my view.
I can see the game if.
Unchecks it, doesn't end your stream, it just hides it from your own personal. No, I don't want to hide it. I just want to do the thing where I can show. See, I don't like. When I move off the thing, it says your stream is still running. We've paused this preview to save your resources. And it's like, I want to keep the preview.
Yeah.
Is there another way to do that?
Me as well. Not that I know of.
All right.
Yeah, looking at this, I would say I completed maybe half of the quests that I discovered, and I discovered about two-thirds of the quests. So I would say something along those lines.
All right.
And some of those I just wasn't interested in. Like,
okay. What I'll do, actually, Let's see. Sorry, I'm going to just try and do this. Right, studio mode, new scene, and then I'll do new window capture, and then I'll do esoteric ebb, and then I'll transform fit to screens. Okay. Or, yeah. So I'll do that. So, yeah, people at home can see my game now. Okay. I'm getting terrible.
I can see it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's see. What's the quest? Questing tree.
Oh, you discovered a lot more quests than me, I think.
What's that one at the top there? Finishing the quest. Talk to everyone you need to talk to when you're done. Head over to the ballot box with Snell. Okay. So that's the end. So what else have I got down here? That's the Crypt Keeper there. So I never found out what that one is. So what's this one here? Norvikian Resistance. Do I get to take root? I like the taking root thing.
Yeah, that was really fun. Yeah, having to choose a feat out of a selection was interesting.
Yeah, but also having your oh, hang on a minute. I get to do this one, take root. Okay. So
it's fairly redundant at this point.
yeah. You have expressed some opinions lately. Now you will listen to True Reason. You'll see what this opportunity. One, to share this tumultuous part of yourself with others. Okay, in that nature, an election. Attempt to ask yourself, for real this time, what should I vote for in this election? Okay, I rolled a 30 intelligence check. Do this, receive me an answer, but do not regret your inquiry. But seriously, who should I vote for? Ask your intelligence. Being blunt is healthy. As such, you should listen to the following well. There is no good choice here, none whatsoever, except yourself, obviously.
I'm just gonna go for a piss while you're working.
Okay. So I shouldn't vote at all? That's up to you. It would certainly be cowardly not to make a decision at all, and might even anger many, although being apolitical would certainly allow you to circumvent many disrupting situations. Truly, it's up to you. Though remember, it is as intellectually dishonest to take a position of neutrality due to fear of saying the wrong thing as it is to take a position for your own gain. A true genius speaks true, listens, then speaks again. Arcanists? Does not exist. Or it might as well not. Perhaps a gathering of wizards. However, branding a political party around an abhorrent ideology of the previous era is not an intelligent idea. Okay. What about the Azkalists? Yeah, okay. What if they just took a little bit? They would never... okay, yeah. Alright. Nothing... Okay. Alright, obviously. Alright, vote for myself, obviously. It says vote for myself. Okay, yeah, my intelligence says vote for myself.
That's unsurprising.
Okay. And then, yeah. Who am I forgetting about? Christmas says no one will ever know who you vote for, so it really doesn't matter. I get to choose a feat. Oh, I get to choose a feat out of six.
Oh, look at the Azgulist one. It's quite funny.
For your brothers and sisters, for everyone below you, to flatten this uneven city, to make everything just and good, it is a simple dream. Whenever you take damage, move one step forward on a secret three-step counter. On step one, a thesis, a d20 is thrown. On step two, if the damage you took is higher than the thesis die, an antithesis d4 die is thrown. On step three, the damage you took is lowered either by one or by the antithesis die if you rolled one during step two. The synthesis
So it's basically dialecticism, essentially.
Yeah.
That made me laugh.
That's good. Because none of these are real, right? Like, all of these are...
Well, they're real, but, like, they do, you know, like...
You can't use
nothing
them.
Nothing else to do in the
game. Yeah, yeah.
No.
So, extra proficiency in roles when speaking with humans. Okay. Right. Free trade, prosper democracy, 10% additional discount on all purchases. the agrarians, the way of the earth, hungry. Whenever you pick up food, you roll a 1d20. If you get 16 or higher, you get an additional food item. Arcanist, greatest wizard of the coast. When you use your last spell slot at any level, you roll a 1d100. If the result is lower than your natural intelligence, you regain that spell slot.
That if that was a real thing, that would actually be quite cool as high intelligence.
Yeah. When you roll When you use up your last spell slot of any level, you roll a d100. If the result is lower than your natural intelligence, you regain that slot spell. Yeah, but that's highly unlikely.
I mean, say your intelligence is 30, it's 1 in 3-ish, which is I wonder how high you can get a single star.
Okay. I'm apolitical. There we go. Oh, that's sped up a little bit now. So what else?
Did you get to the bottom of the assassin thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Did you snitch on her in the end?
Oh no, absolutely not. No, so that conversation at the end, I recommended that she join the Earth God.
These are my final stats, by the way.
Oh, they're quite balanced. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're quite high in a few there. That's nice.
Yeah.
Again, it's interesting that we both dumped strength.
Yes. Although I did pass a couple of strength checks.
Yeah, no, I mean, because even my... So what's mine? Hang on. So, oh, that's great. I can't work the screenshot. Button. So mine's -4. So potentially I can still pass a 16 strength.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, it happened. It happened a few times. It does feel good when it's a very low stat and you roll and you just get lucky. That's fun. I was sad that you couldn't romance the hag.
Where is the hag? Which one's the hag again?
You have to meet her, you have to jump down the well in the Sphinx, the Drunken Sphinx.
Oh, okay. But no, I jumped down the well, I just ended up in the goblin bit.
No, in the Drunken Sphinx? At the back corner.
Oh right, yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, so if you never did the Sphinx's riddle, okay, there's quite an interesting and powerful thing that you didn't see. So on a second playthrough, do the Sphinx's riddle.
Okay. Interesting. I'll have to give that a go. Is there anything else in the game you want me to take a look at for you? What about the three cantrips? Dancing Light, Druidcraft, Thaumatology. Do you have any more cantrips?
Yeah, I did get those. Let me see if I don't think I had any others. Let me just check.
Five apples will appear. Good.
No, just those three. Shall I read down my spells? See what we got different.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I found a secret. What is the secret here?
What is it?
Do I have to go around?
Is it highlighting?
No. That's weird. Oh, wait.
God, I never used that spell.
Okay, it's... I don't know. Is it just firing off in a random direction or something?
Or is it maybe something that was activatable up before this point in the game, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't get down to the crypts.
Yeah. This is making me want to do another play or carry on my other play.
Even
more. Yeah. No, actually, get your spells up. I just want to.
Oh, yeah, spell. Okay, right. Okay. So I've got Crusader's Mantle.
Hang on. Do it on your. Open up the spell list because it'll be alphabetical and we can see what we're missing. Yeah.
Also, I just want to see any more on the questing tree.
Yeah, you got more quests. You found more quests than me, and I think you finished more.
Oh, yeah. There's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That are left.
Yeah, I think I've got way more than that are left. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, only six. 1, 2, 3, 4. You said only six, yeah. Okay, similar.
Okay.
But different ones, interestingly.
Yeah. Right, okay, so my cantrips. Dancing Light, Druidcraft.
Not the same cantrips, yeah.
Bless yourself, Divine Guidance. Charm Person.
Yep.
Charm a humanoid you can see within range, must make a wisdom saving throw.
I would just say the names, otherwise this is going to
be... Comprehend Languages.
Yep.
Cure Wounds. I've never used Detect Alignment.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Okay. Detect Secrets, yep, just use that one. Good Apple, so you can...
Yeah.
It basically heals you 5 HP. Grease, never used that one. Grease covers the ground.
I used it once, and it didn't seem to do much.
Okay. Inflict Wounds, make a melee spell.
I never got around to using that. That would be so handy in some of the fights, but it wasn't anything.
I always talk my way out of fights, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I never, yeah. So I think Charisma could be used alongside... Charisma and Wisdom might be quite good.
Yeah, that could be cool. Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah, Intelligence here seems to be quite magic-orientated as well.
Yeah, you're a wizard. It's book smarts. It's history, lore.
Yeah.
Okay. Speak with animals. I've got.
Yeah, that was.
I've got turn undead after that.
Oh, I don't have turn undead. Bark skin. Armor. Divine hex. Enhanced
level. Yeah, I've got augury. I've got augury before bark skin.
What's that?
Augury tells you whether your next roll is going to be good or bad.
Oh.
That comes out of D&D. I think that's actually in D&D.
Oh, okay. Tapping into animalistic spirit energy, enhanced mental abilities.
I don't have that one.
Divine Hex. Divine Hex. Curse on a creature you can see within range. Every roll is increased by your proficiency.
Oh, that's cool.
Prayer of Healing.
After Bark Skin? I've got Prayer of Healing. I've got Knock after Bark Skin. Have you got Knock?
No. You've got more spells than me, I think. Okay.
We've just got different ones because I'm missing. Okay, my third level is Aura of Vitality.
No.
Speak with Dead and Speak with Plants.
No, just
completely different. Oh, two different ones.
I revived a guy, brought him back from the dead, and then he just sort of ran off, and then he turned out to be like the father of, I think, like the newspaper guy or the young fascist guy or something, and then he ended up being. He was a twat. I wasn't going to spend all that money reviving him because he was horrible. And
I never got Revivify. I got Speak with Dead, and I did that on the elf.
Oh, you did that on the elf? Did
they? Yeah, for the the elf that was. Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
What's my gear at the end? I've got this here: Dexterity -2 Strength. My weapon: Intelligence and Wisdom. Book, Dexterity, ring of Spell Storing.
Never saw that.
Oh, did you not? Oh, okay.
No. That Sending Pebble, do you actually ever use that to talk to people?
No, how do you use that to talk to people? I just thought it was a thing to give you...
Yeah, so the examine, if you examine it, you can use that so you don't have to pick up Snell every day. You can just call him to you.
Oh. Okay. Who's
I'm fascinated by Lady Sageleaf. I don't know whether you can do more with her, but I kind of didn't do a ton with it. I want to do more with Lady Sageleaf because what I learned is she's not a goblin.
Oh.
And I'm really intrigued. I think she's really fucking cool. I think she's one of my favourite characters.
How dare you send me a pebble message? What does Viskin have to say? Very cool. Merch.
I don't know if it was the same for you, but because I said all the stupid things with Biskin, so I was like this. I was like this bumbling idiot that he sort of tolerated and respected the abilities of. Like I was just, like he would roll. I felt like he was always rolling his eyes at me, but like in a friendly way.
Yeah. Now I'm just getting back into the game. It's like, yeah, I kind of want to.
Yeah, this is I love this bit. Where. Offering it because we essentially had this bit in Divinity the other day and we didn't give a fucking shit.
Yeah.
But this bit in this game, going and just chatting with all the characters about all the stuff that's happened, I loved it.
Yeah.
Rat Darrow's daughter out, by the way?
No, I didn't. No.
I'm curious as to how that plays out.
There's a lot of characters here. My guess would be it happens at the end of the game, so there's probably no consequences.
Oh yeah, but I just mean dialogue-wise, how it plays out.
Yeah, yeah, it's I like the music is good actually. Yeah, like
I love the music. Yeah,
yeah. People at home can hear the music as well, so because it's on a little bit. There's a lot of characters I don't recognize. Oh, there's Duck. Hello, Duck.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there was a few. I would say maybe a quarter of the characters. I was like, I don't know who this is.
Yeah. I'd be.
You didn't kill the alligator.
Nope, didn't kill the alligator. No.
Did you eat his tasty snack?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Oh, there's the skull there as well. Like right there.
Oh yeah. I didn't notice that.
Can I? Oh, I didn't talk to. Wait a minute. What?
It was fun. Yeah. No, I discovered that right at the end of the game as well. There was something up there. Actually, no, I discovered that at the beginning of my second playthrough.
Oh wow. I had no idea. Cleric! The skull's spinst. Yeah, gems twinkling. Come sit. Oh, he's got. Is it a long conversation? I'm not going to sit next to him. I'm done. Right, I'm going to close out the game now before I just start
Yeah, should we call it that? There is a game of trivia brewing in the Discord.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm due for a walk with a friend of the show, Carla.
Oh, okay.
So we're gonna crack on with that. But I might be around later. I'm working tomorrow, cool. But then I've got 2 days off, so I'll be definitely around.
Yeah,
for
some Hamish things.
Some Hamish things. Crank Space Virgins. Really enjoying that.
And starting our Divinity 2.
Starting Divinity 2, yeah. I will say one thing about Crank, but I'll leave it at that. I get why you gave it the rating you did.
Yeah.
At the time when I first watched it, I probably didn't realise how tongue-in-cheek it was.
Yes. I mean, it's tongue-in-cheek. It's very punk. It's out to offend everybody.
Yeah.
To dismantle, you know, bourgeois sensibilities. It's, well, we shouldn't say.
Yeah. Anyway,
if you just see the crassness and react to that, then you can be like, you know.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So, that will be coming in soon. So look for that on the PeerTube.
You know, the sort of the end credits at the end, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
A little message from the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And he says in that, I don't know if you read it, but he says in that message something about, like, thank you to anybody who played this game, in brackets, whether you paid for it or not, which I thought was nice.
Oh, that's nice.
So if you can't afford it and you want to play it, go pirate it.
Yeah. But how much did it cost?
I pirated it initially to test it out, and I can't really afford games at the moment. But I got it for like £12 as a key, and I was like, this game deserves money, you know.
But I got it on almost on your recommendation there and then, didn't I?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I was thinking about this pitch. I think this is the first time that I can think of that we've both enjoyed the same new game at the same time.
Interesting.
That virtually never happens.
That does virtually never happen, yeah.
There's games that we both enjoy, but I think this is the first time a new release, we've both played it at the same time and enjoyed it. And I enjoyed that, like, just, you know, the chit-chat back and forth about it.
Yeah. One thing I do like about it, and this is a thing that actually impacts a lot of how I enjoy a game, is just the vibes. That is a big thing about games for me. It's why I really enjoyed, but interestingly enough, have yet to finish Neon Struct. Because it's a nicely enough made game. I really enjoyed it, and I should. A lot of it is like when I've got the time. I don't have. It's not that I don't. I don't want to say I don't have time, because I could make the time. I made the time for Esoteric M.
Yeah.
But it's like there's so many things to do with time. Do you know what I mean? Like.
Yeah. No. The vibes of this game. It's a world with its problems, but it's a pleasant place to hang out. Interesting place to hang out.
What I quite like about this, and you see this a lot in, like, nowadays Dungeons and Dragons, is a less stricter adherence to the medieval part of medieval fantasy.
This is like, clearly the rule set and stuff is very D&D inspired, but like this world I don't think is any part of any D&D thing.
Well,
I think it's its own thing.
Yeah, it's its own thing. But even in D&D, now I feel this is a more like a nowadays kind of thing, is that the world is not taken too seriously. Whereas, like, some fantasy take the medieval part of medieval fantasy really seriously. A little bit like, I suppose, like Game of Thrones or something. And if you think about it, the actual medieval era was probably pretty drab. It probably wasn't that much fun to be in, really, right?
Yeah. Especially, well, the history of that would be, and it's very good, it does it very well, is the it's like a double-barreled name. The one that's literally, it's kind of like if Oblivion were set in literally the Middle Ages on Earth.
Oh, Elden Ring.
And was very, no. Like literally the Middle Ages. No magic, no.
Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Yeah. Which is very good, but it's too fucking slow for me. But like, it's like medieval Sim.
I ended up just watching video game. I own the game, but I ended up watching like playthroughs of it instead.
Yeah.
Which I, because again, I love that.
I worked for like 30 hours in that game just to buy a horse.
Yeah.
Like
it was too slow. I get that appeals to a lot of people.
I think it wants to be. Like, I don't think it was, it, you know, it wants to be that, and it's great, but I just, I don't have the, like you say, time. But
But they did go for the actual realism of it, which I respect them for. They said one of the things.
Well, I do appreciate things that lean into the fact that this is a fictional world. Like, let's say something. Let's use that to say something and have fun rather than.
Yeah, like they have bikes, which I find kind of interesting.
I love that. I love that so much. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. God, do you know what? I wish it was easier to bike around here. It's so hilly.
Yeah, hilly places, obviously. At that point, like an e-bike.
I'm tempted. I'm very tempted. I've got a regular bike at the moment. I kind of like the idea of working on my fitness a little bit, you know, just a bit of cardio to, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, cycling anyway, so like going up hills on a bike. Like, I used to love cycling. I used to cycle about 8 miles a day, every day. But going uphill was never fun. It's never enjoyable. It's always horrible.
Yeah, it's tempting. I've seen some secondhand ones that look pretty good. My parents have them. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. When I next see my parents, they're out of the country at the moment. I would like to have a go on their e-bikes. They're big e-bike converts. And because the thing is, at the moment, I'm using my car because it's like, well, if I sell it, I get shit money for it. So I'm just going to run it into the ground and make the best of it. It doesn't use that much fuel. Yeah. You know, I use it. But like, once that car goes, I don't know if I want to have... Me and Rosie don't really need two cars. Like, that's too many cars.
An e-bike makes sense. Just being able to... Because biking is just... I think for manageable distances, biking is just more pleasant than the faff of dealing with a car and parking it and all that.
Yeah. I hate parking. Parking is basically my Dante's Inferno hell would be having to parking. It would be parking based.
Well, it's also even back in the 90s when it's not just the activity of parking, which is tedious in itself, but it's as a counterpoint, with a bike, you know, you can bike, go in one shop, leave it outside, bike to the next shop. You know, the bike is with you. Whereas the car, at the end of whatever you do, you got to go to wherever you parked it, which might be a decent walk away, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
You'd be halfway home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now I get free bus passes. That's also an option for me as well.
Just get to
ride the bus. So, I interestingly enough, I like driving the bus as a job, but I'm not super fond of driving a car as a utility.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's just, I don't mind. It's not, I don't know. I'd rather, I also find like cars to be a little bit like, I know that like a lot of people think of them as like liberating. It's like, oh, I could go anywhere in a car. Mm. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, especially nowadays with so much regulation on cars, because there are just so many on the road and parking and all this kind of stuff, not just even regulation, like literally people just park wherever the fuck they want, and it's, you know, and it's just like it's just a chore. It's a pain.
It's a lot of faff.
And I don't
like,
you know,
a bike is liberating.
It's just the hill. It's just the local terrain. If I lived
I mean, assume when you're in the city, it's less hilly, or the town or whatever. But
there's more things. It all depends. But like, there's more things in short distance. If I just wanted to get to like the nearest like shopping area center, that's okay. It's downhill to get there, but it's a fucking uphill slog to get back. So
yeah. This is the way it goes.
I'd much if it was level, no contest. I did consider a e-scooter, which I kind of like the look of, as dangerous as they look as well. Probably not as dangerous as motorbikes.
Yeah, they look fun as well,
But they are illegal, and you can get 6 points on your license if you get caught on them.
Oh, they're illegal?
They're just straight up illegal. You can't drive them on pavements, you can't drive them on roads. So they should... I hope they make some sort of mechanism to legalise them. Because it's, you know, look, we let old people on their mobility scooters. We should let young people on their e-scooters. Put a speed limit on them if you have to, or whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, you know, regulate
cap them at 10 mile an hour or whatever you want to do. Mm. I don't know. How fast is 10 mile an hour? That's like a run, isn't it? 10 mile an hour, 15 miles an hour?
Yeah, that's a good, like, so what's like 3 miles an hour is like a relaxed walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so three times that. Yeah, getting towards a sprint, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, going towards sprint like that. Yeah, but cap them at something sensible. I get how old people moan at them, but let's be honest, like old people moan at kids, you know. I think it's a little bit like that. It's like old man yells at cloud is how a lot of people feel.
Apparently an elite sprinter can surpass 20 miles an hour, so 10 would be fine.
Yeah.
Half of a Usain Bolt.
Oh, Usain Bolt could go way far. He could go like 35 miles an hour, I reckon. Okay. How fast can Usain Bolt go? Can you Google that for like?
Yeah.
What's his top speed? Because that's got to be. God, imagine running at that fucking like. Does he get scared?
27 miles an hour.
Wow. So he could
his top speed. That's not the average.
27 miles an hour.
That was at the 60 to 80 meters mark on the 100.
Okay.
Yeah. So for any Europeans, that's 45 kilometers.
So he's not quite speeding in a built-up zone, but he's really quite close to it.
He's close, yeah.
Yeah, he'd be... can you get done for speeding by running faster than 20 miles an hour in a 20 zone?
I assume not. I assume there's no law for that. I assume it applies to powered vehicles.
Yeah, it's got to be, right? Because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that... a cappella is not counted with under copyright law. Like, people can a cappella any song.
And well, you can perform. I think you can perform any song. I don't think you have to pay. Am I wrong? You don't have to pay to perform a song. Only it's recordings that are copyrighted, not the, right?
What about public performances?
Right, because you can do cover. Hang on.
Yeah. Double check that one. I mean, people don't. Like, I don't know any musicians that, you know, but is it the recording? Not some kind of license or anything.
Okay, yeah, apparently, yeah. You need copyright permission to perform a song. I didn't know that. That's stupid.
Yeah, you got to make to pluck strings in a particular way. You got to
copyright on that.
I mean, it's almost as absurd as like making. You can't make those sounds with your mouth. No.
Yeah.
It's too.
Oh, that's fucking stupid. That's depressing.
Yeah, I assume
performances were their own thing.
Well, I'm pretty sure that like the performers that I've known don't pay fucking royalties to just play in a cover of something in a coffee shop or whatever.
I think I'd got mixed up because like with obviously classical performance, most classical music is in the public domain now.
Yeah.
But the performances are copyrighted. I think I just extrapolated that from that is always the case.
Okay, yeah. But on, I think, you know, because you can see a cappella stuff on YouTube quite freely of like covers of stuff. And I'm pretty sure... A cappella is...
I mean, there's going to be a point where it becomes a derived work, right? I guess, are the lyrics and the music copyrighted? Like, if I took the lyrics of a recent pop song and sang it to a different tune, is that, or vice versa? Like, how much of it has to be, you know?
Yeah, and what if you've just... How many words in a row does it need to be before it's a problem?
Yeah, okay, how about this? Okay, so I reproduce current pop song musically and vocals, and then I reverse it and upload that to YouTube.
Because
that's a very different thing. That bears no resemblance to the copyright thing whatsoever. But then somebody could download it and reverse it. We need a lawyer.
Yeah, I would imagine there are some answers to some of these questions.
I wonder if that would be a way to subvert copyright laws. Just upload everything reversed.
I reckon there's probably something in that in the case, because it probably counts as like encryption,
like an
or
easy
something.
Transformation on the file or something like that.
Anyway, we should probably think about wrapping up. All right, thank you for joining us on, I guess this is a freebooters, I'm going to call it a freebooters. And we'll see you when we do Crank on Space Virgins. I always kind of feel like, shouldn't there be like one? I always feel like we do stuff all over the place a little bit, and I hope it's not
and
too
it's
clustered.
All the same thing, really?
Yeah.
Really, we've already got space versions. Really, is it right?
Yeah. Well, then sometimes I do something on my own on the website, and then you write stuff, and I don't know. It's fine. Okay, cool. Anyway, let's wrap it up there. And actually, the PeerTube, Hamish's PeerTube, is kind of like the central repository for this stuff, isn't it?
Really, it's all on the Hamish Extended Universe.
Cool. All right, anyway, ta-da!